Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Great to have Chris and Bob Buehner on hand today.
Glad to be here, Steve.
Always a pleasure, man.
Time now for our play-by-play call of the day. An old friend of mine who used to work here in State College, Mark Vandermeer, with the call on the Houston Texans radio network.
Oh.
We had to play that. Oh.
No. Let's try it again.
Over right guard, has a little room, breaks the tackle, 10, 15, 20, right side, 25, 30. He's to the sideline, the 40, the 50. He's going to go all the way, the 30, the 20, the 10, the 5. Rock and roll. Touchdown, Houston. 97 yards. That one's for you, Bob.
Referring to Bob McNair, by the way. I remember talking to Mark one time about Bob McNair, because Mark had been here in State College. There was a point where the Lady Lion basketball team had two play-by-play broadcasts before they went to the network. One was done by Jerry Fisher, and Jerry's retiring this year, and the other one was done by Mark Vandermeer. And then when they grouped it together as one, Jerry became the play-by-play voice of Lady Lion basketball on the network. Mark then eventually got a job in Central Michigan. Then he went to UMass, and then he went to Miami Hurricanes, and then to the Texans. And I was talking to him about the Texans job, and he originally was hired by the radio station there, and eventually the Texans brought their radio broadcast in-house. And when they did that, he then worked around Bob McNair, and he told me his personal feeling was what an incredible guy Bob McNair was. So that's why you hear him say that at the end. Well, part of that is the fact that he felt very close to Mr. McNair. So, all right. Let's bring in Neil Coulong. Bob, okay, here we go. This is where Neil and I are going to break down the Steelers. Now, there are some people that say that the Steelers broke down.
No.
So... Let's get to it here. Neil, welcome to the show. It's always great to have you with us.
Yeah, as always, great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Hope you had a great Thanksgiving.
I did. You know, we really just kind of a quasi-working holiday. You get to couple hours break in there before games, after games. You're working a little bit, but
sure.
Typically you get Friday and Saturday off, so that's sort of nice.
Yeah, it is nice. All right, let's get to the Steelers. Have you ever seen them run that play before? I don't recall them ever running the play, period, even at the 50-yard line.
Which play?
The interception where there were 18 people between Ben and Antonio Brown.
Well, sadly, I have seen Ben throw a couple passes like that over the years. But yeah. For the suggestion, at least, it seemed they implied this heavily, that it was a run-pass option. They claim they've been doing that a lot. I don't think that that's necessarily the case.
When?
At the very least, they want to show and tell teams that that's what it was. To me, it looked like the snap screwed everything up. It was supposed to be a fake give and a quick, you know, shovel over the middle. That's more in line with what a lot of what Fichtner has been dialing up lately, especially inside the 10, inside the 5. We saw a lot of similar concepts against Jacksonville. That's really worked well for him, and certainly didn't on that play. But more than anything, it was just kind of a panic decision by Roethlisberger, very reminiscent of the decision he made to throw where he did against the Patriots last year when things weren't really working out very well. So I think they might want to spend some time on goal line stuff this week. Certainly a tough loss for the team, but in a lot of ways, really a game they should have won, and they did in a lot of ways. They lost probably the five biggest plays of the game, and that ultimately was the difference.
Right, and yeah, you're right. The five biggest plays all went Denver's way. The they also have been using the shovel pass a lot around the goal line, too. Seems like they're trying to come up with different ways of doing what they're not doing in the middle of the field.
Yeah, you know, I think that's a good way to put it. Jacksonville sniffed out the shovel pass last week. For them to run anything that looked even remotely like a shovel pass, and they did it again earlier in the game as well, for them to continue going back to that without, you know, seemingly noticing that the defense is adjusting very well to it, I'm not really sure exactly what they're planning on doing. But the thing that got me thinking about was more than 2015, back when they would go for two if the wind was blowing a certain direction. They had all kinds of plays at the goal line.
Yes.
The personnel obviously isn't the same and never is year to year, but they still have a boatload of talent inside, outside, up the middle. They're loaded when it comes to skill position players, guys that can make plays. You don't just need Antonio Brown. You know, you don't even just need Juju Smith-Schuster. There are a lot of guys out there that can make plays, and they do well utilizing that. But it just kind of seems like they've almost hit like a mental wall or something inside the red zone. And you're really looking at, you know, as Mike said today at his press conference, he's a results-oriented guy. Well, the results are you're 1-1 in your last two games. Flip either of those around. Probably should have lost against Jacksonville. You probably should have beat Denver. But either way, red zone issues were prominently displayed in both of those performances, and they were on the losing end of it. And in a lot of ways, they could have lost both games. So you're looking at an offense that just seems to have kind of lost its edge in short yardage situations. You can't help but wonder the amount of touchdowns that James Conner had scored rushing the ball prior to his big drop against Jacksonville versus how he was utilized against Denver. He's not really sure what exactly the Steelers are doing to adjust to what their opponents are doing to them over the second half of the season.
It's interesting. How'd you see the defense play in this one?
I thought they did pretty well overall. I mean, yeah. You know, it comes a point the other team is just going to kind of beat you. And I think they got gashed a bit up front, and a lot of that I think was caused, one, by the continued absence of Stephon Tuitt. They're not going to be able to put their best heavy line out there to you know, really try to stop the run. That's kind of a given going into a game like this. Overall, though, they got the Broncos off the field on third down. They were not incredibly effective overall. It wasn't their best game, but I thought all things considered, they did pretty well. You know, it wasn't a bad performance, but usually what I go to in these cases is how many sacks did you get and how many turnovers did you cause. Right. The fact they got, I think it was two sacks maybe, decent for the amount of times they threw the ball. I mean, Denver only ran 53 plays, so you're not going to get a ton of sacks like you did against Jacksonville. But overall, the real issues were stopping the run, which I think is more personnel caused than anything else, something they hopefully will be able to get past this coming week. You know, I think there are still some cracks there, but, you know, to me this is really just more about the offensive side of the ball not executing inside the red area, places you really need to succeed. They really had a tough time in this game, and just simply turning the ball over at the one, turning the ball over 3 feet inside the goal line. Those are losing plays, and that really kind of tells the story.
Now, also part of the story is that they are now out of options except to win out to get a first-round bye. I think a first-round bye for the Steelers to have any postseason success, to me, is imperative. What do you think about that? Do you think, is it just getting into the tournament good enough? Or does the first-round bye have something to do with it?
Well, to some degree, and there are a lot of different ways to look at it. You know, I think the week off last year really killed a lot of the momentum that they had going into the playoffs and suffered a pretty bad defeat in the first round. And there have been times that they've played really well in that first week and built up some momentum and gotten to the AFC Championship game and beyond. So it really kind of depends on the makeup of the team. You know, knock on wood, they're relatively healthy. They haven't suffered the types of injuries a lot of other teams are suffering this time of the year. So, you know, I don't necessarily think one way or the other it's going to really impact them a whole lot where we sit right now. Odds are really good. Whoever comes out of the AFC is going to have to beat either Kansas City, New England, or both. And now you have Houston playing some great football. They've been on a tear as of late, and they seem to be getting better. I mean, Watson looks better and better each week. You know, it, just even grabbing the fourth seed right now looks like a decent spot, because the AFC suddenly has become, you know, probably a lot more competitive than the NFC is. AFC is getting better after each week, and it, the, you know, one of the best teams in the football still sits at the top, and the Patriots are now getting hot. So I think it's a tough go either way. They're going to want to win out simply because, you know, the, who knows, Baltimore might win out too. They might have to win out just to win the division.
Yeah, no doubt about that. I want to ask you about Houston for a moment. You bring them up because they won again last night, and the Watson factor. He already has shown a lot of guts. I mean, anybody who gets hurt the way he did then has to endure a bus ride to Jacksonville and then endure the bus ride back because he wants his team to win, I think, tells everybody about the kind of guy he is. What kind of factor is a football player is Watson on what Bill wants to do?
I think Watson overall is the exact prototypical leader of a football team. He sacrifices himself. He goes out and makes big, spontaneous plays. And he has, obviously, a very firm command of the offense. And that's something I think, for me, is probably the most impressive thing, considering he hasn't been out there all that long.
No.
He really doesn't have a whole lot of experience. And let's keep in mind, at this point, Steve, he's operated, you know, maybe, what, two-thirds of his career with a healthy leg. Maybe not even that.
That's a good point. I never really thought about that. That's a good point.
You look at it like this, and let's compare him to Carson Wentz just in an injury situation. They both tore ACL toward the end of last season. I understand there are super freaks out there and guys that go under the radar over to Germany to get stem cell therapy and things like that. Humanistically, you don't come back from ACL surgery in 9 months. You just don't.
That's right.
You can get on the field. You're not going to be even close to 100%. The weird phenomenon that's going to happen with Deshaun Watson is he was less healthy earlier in the year than he's going to be at the end. There are very few players that play 16 games that are going to be able to say that. But he's recovered from it to a point now you really start to see the mobility and the confidence that he has in his legs. He's stepping and driving the ball. I think last night was a microcosm of their season. They start off right away, probably not exactly as they wanted to, certainly defensively, but they're still competitive. This season they started off 0-3 and then rattled off, you know, eight straight wins, and the streak they're still on and probably going to continue. Watson is getting better. The Texans are getting better. And, it, you know, in the end, who knows? Who's to say Houston can't be the two seed? You might have Pittsburgh and New England hosting, you know, wild card games as far as we can see right now.
Dallas is going to play New Orleans on Thursday night. That's one thing that's happened. Thursday night football has at least been able to get some compelling matchups that make you say, I want to watch the game. When you watch New Orleans, Drew Brees is obviously the centerpiece of what happens there. But around that centerpiece, what is Sean Payton doing?
I think Payton, from a schematic standpoint, he certainly knows what he has with Brees. I think what he has built, and a lot of this, I wouldn't credit the entire offense, but just simply the implementation of this piece, a lot of it with a two-headed running game, something they utilize very well last season to a very successful year, something I absolutely would not have predicted they were going to have at week one in 2017. They did it running the ball, having a very multifaceted rushing attack. This year, what Payton is doing is telling everybody, I've got two guys that can run the ball now that Ingram is back from suspension. One of them can catch the ball at a high level.
Right.
I've got, you know, what could be the best receiver in football as of production this year in Michael Thomas. Oh, and Drew Brees is somebody that, frankly, I'm going to continue to call big-time plays for because I want him to win an MVP. So, frankly, take the over in every single game we play this year. We're not going to lose at home. Are you able to keep up with us? Are you able to stop us? I mean, Brees has so many options, so many weapons. He's dialed into to the scheme that he's given. Payton, really, I think, this is kind of his you know, I don't want to say like he's retiring, but it's his final symphony. You know, it's all there for him. For the taking, he's never had this much offensive talent. I don't think a whole lot of teams in NFL history have had as much offensive talent as they have. So, you know, defense aside, one, New Orleans isn't going to lose in New Orleans for the remainder of the season. The question is whether or not they can get a conference championship game there. And two, defensively, what are they going to need to do to you know, get a 10-point lead where they could really drive the dagger in and blow out every team they play the rest of the way. I think that is Peyton's line of thinking, and he's drawing up game plans that support that, to be honest.
Dallas looked incredibly ordinary when they played Tennessee. What's allowed them to thrive since?
To some degree, I think they got back to basics in a lot of ways. I think they got back to their fastball. They quit, you know, trying to locate their fourth pitch the way that they kind of were at the middle mark of the year. And they played some kind of weaker competition. You know, it's not incredibly difficult to beat Colt McCoy on a short week at home. You know, you hope they would win that game.
Right.
And from there, I don't think they were ever as down and out as people made them out to be. They had kind of a rough stretch there, but they have some talent on that team. And they're probably about where I would have thought they were going to be. In position to win a division title at like probably 9-7, maybe 10-6 if they get a break here and there. Probably one and out in the playoffs. I don't think they're a great team. How about this? Ask me next week. Let's see what they do on Thursday. I think it's a really intriguing game for both teams, and it could possibly be a playoff preview. You know, I don't think the NFC is all that strong in their 5 and 6 seeds going into the playoffs. It's not impossible to think, a wild card team, going to a division champion in the NFC has really no chance. It's certainly possible. So let's see what they do. I don't know. Dallas is just really kind of a bipolar team this year.
Yeah.
Not entirely sure, but I'm not surprised where they sit right now.
What do you think of Lamar Jackson, a quarterback for Baltimore?
It's hard to say just because you have fanatics on both sides of the equation here.
That's why I was asking you, because I thought you'd at least be able to realistically say pro or con, because I know it's still a work in progress, and I know that he runs more than the average quarterback, obviously.
Well, I don't know how much we've really seen to make that determination. First game, he ran, 27 times or something?
That's,
you're not
going
to get a quarterback doing that. You know, you can't really tell how they want to use him. And coming off of a big-time rushing performance, he throws a pretty good amount in the first half against a pretty bad Oakland team, and he looked terrible. He really did not look good. He didn't look comfortable at all. And to his credit, they changed a few things around, and he looked a bit more productive in the second half, even though he got the Ravens scored 34 points. 14 of them came off special teams and defensive touchdowns. He's managing the offense to a certain degree. He's able to make plays with his legs. They can scheme up a couple passes, like the slot and go that they had to the tight end against Oakland. It's not, I don't think the stage is too big for him at this point, but he looks more like what a rookie quarterback probably should look like, and that's not what Baker Mayfield has looked like over the last couple weeks. There's where the comparison is going to get screwed up, and this really probably is what you should expect from a class that had, five quarterbacks taken in the first round. The fifth one is the fifth best quarterback of that draft. What do you really expect from him playing halfway through year one? I think Jackson will definitely see better days, but right now he doesn't look very good. I really think if Baltimore wants to make a run at the playoffs, they're going to have a better shot of doing that with Flacco overall, and it's not now. It's not even necessarily next week. The more film that Jackson puts down, the more they're going to spot tendencies, and the thinner that offensive playbook is going to reveal itself to be. And that I think is Baltimore's thing. Right now, they can use an element of surprise with them, but that novelty is going to wear off sooner rather than later.
Neil, always a pleasure. Thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Definitely. Thanks for having me.
Neil Coulong, USA Today, back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors.
SMC is where you want to be for your next new F-150, and everything starting with E. Make 2018 a November to remember with savings up to $13,000 on your next new Ford F-150. Sunbury Motors has F-150s starting at $25,669. All SUVs with the letter E will plummet in price for SMC's November to remember. 67 Ford Escapes, 23 EcoSports, 22 Explorers, all at at one location. Brand new Ford Escapes starting at an unheard of $17,820. If you haven't looked into the all-new Ford EcoSport, now is the time. 2019 Ford EcoSports start at $19,880. SMC has the SUV that started it all, the Ford Explorer, for under $32,000. Hurry in now to SMC so you can show off your brand new Ford at your holiday dinner or to the buddies at Deer Camp. Sunbury Motors in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury.
Great to have you with us on the show today. At the moment, suit store is shut. He is bobbing and weaving to this song.
Actually, I think we've seen him.
Now that we've frightened the audience.
Absolutely scared it.
It's a perfect time to go to the news, Bob.
It is.
Oh, are we sure Shiklemy doesn't have a game next Wednesday the 5th?
Oh, I hope they do.
Hey, because we've got that get-together.
Yes, we do. Looking forward to it.
I'm really looking forward to it. It's a lot of fun. Hey, last year we had a blast. I'm trying to think what the key ingredient was.
I know what it wasn't.
Shiklemy had a game that night.
Exactly.
Oh, boy, Sean and I had a lot of fun. All right, so. Elio, I hear you in the back laughing.
Yeah, I can hear it.
I'm
actually going to be there this year, so I'm excited.
Well, come on. You could be there. Come on, man.
I'm going to be.
Yeah, you better be. We're going to have some fun.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
I think maybe we scared Steve off.
Oh, no. Hopefully he's somewhere in the Sunbury Motors studio, rumbling around, maybe getting ready for the big Penn State, Virginia Tech, ACC Big Ten Challenge. It's going to be at the Bryce Jordan tonight, starting at 7 o'clock.
Hard to say.
He's got the play-by-play action with Dick Girardi tonight, big game, and then following that game on will be the Duke Indiana game.
Yeah.
So that'll be a big one.
That'll be really good.
Hey Steve, a comment for you following your interview in the last half hour. How much enjoyment did you get watching the success Bill O'Brien has had this year with the Houston team?
Oh no, I'm really happy for Bill. They're playing really well. I know how highly he thinks of Deshaun Watson. I was talking with Bill back in April, and I was asking him about quarterbacks. I asked him, how difficult is it for him to evaluate quarterbacks in today's college RPO spread system? And he said, well, it's not that bad, he said, to be honest with you. I said, well, what about the part where they're never under center? He says, nah, Steve, I can teach. He said, well, I can teach them that. I thought that was an interesting answer. I've not heard anybody give that answer yet, except for him, that they could teach him or teach a quarterback how to play under center. Now, you see, Watson is still in the shotgun a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But they had the ability to teach him to be under center because, look, under center is a little bit different. It's not just taking the snap. It's the ability after that to drop back, and in a drop back have the ability to scan as you drop back. He said, you know, you could teach that. He said, it all comes down to the basics. He said, that you and I have talked about so many times. And I said to him, I said, you mean footwork and accuracy? He says, absolutely. He said, that's what I'm looking for right away. I am looking for footwork and accuracy. If they have the right footwork, then they'll be accurate with the ball. He says, so that's what I'm looking for first. He says, now obviously arm strength does mean something, but that's what he's looking for. He said, the other parts, he says, we can teach. That's interesting. I've never heard an NFL coach talk about what they can teach. They always act like you have to come in ready to do everything.
Yeah, I mean, they look to the college coaches to do the teaching, and you know, in the pros, you're supposed to be ready from day one to just do it.
Exactly. That's what I found interesting in talking to him about this, because hey, today there's so much RPO stuff. That's where, for example, I'll tell you a guy that I think is ready. Now, and it's going to be up to him to make the choice as to what to do. But Dwayne Haskins of Ohio State.
Mm.
Dwayne Haskins, yes, does play in a shotgun system at Ohio State. He does not play under center. But he already has the pro mechanics and the arm strength that you see that can make a play. It's going to be interesting to see the decision he has to make, because I think a lot of people do not realize that Dwayne Haskins is not a sophomore. He is a redshirt sophomore. And that's a big difference, because that means he's been in college 3 years, and that means he's eligible to come out after this year if he so desires.
Yeah. He's 21 years of age going on 22.
I mean, that's the bottom line, is he will have had 3 years of college, and that's what it comes down to. And I think that he has to make a decision as to whether he's a top 10 pick or not, and he very well might be a top 10 pick. Herbert Oregon has been highly regarded by many people, but he got hurt over the weekend. What does that mean? I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know. I don't know how bad the injury is.
The other comment, yeah. Steve, are you aware that we have a local boy that's been starting for the Steelers this season? Number 71, Matt Filer.
Yeah.
A Bloom University grad, went from class of 2014, free agent, practice squad, now a starter for the Steelers.
And now you got Julian Davenport starting at left tackle out of Bucknell for Houston.
Yeah, so we've got some local boys making good in the big time.
Yeah, no question.
And speaking of Bucknell, big week over in Bison Land.
Yeah.
Tomorrow night, the basketball team takes on Northeastern. They had a big win over the weekend, a come-from-behind win over the Catamounts of the University of Vermont on the road.
Yeah.
And then on Saturday afternoon, a 2 p.m. game, Monmouth. But the big one, Steve, Friday night at the Soika, when the Nittany Lions bring their national championship team to do grappling with the Bison.
Okay, so here's how the parking's going to work.
Exactly.
They're saying the media should park at the indoor track area. People are being encouraged to park at lots 55, 63, 65, 73, 75, 77.
Yep.
Accessible parking will be available in lot 7. Shuttle buses will pick up and drop off at these lots, and they'll be operating throughout the game. The shuttle buses will be in service from 5:30 to 9:30. The shuttle bus stop for Soika Pavilion will be in front of the Grand Building at lot number 17.
Yeah.
So additional parking is also available in downtown Lewisburg. But again, you're encouraged to park in lots 55, 63, 65, 73, 75, 77. Accessible parking will be available in lot 7. Shuttle buses will pick up and drop off at these lots and will operate throughout the match. The shuttle buses will be in service from 5:30 at night to 9:30 at night. And again, they're going to be stopping in front of the Grand Building, which is lot 17.
Yeah.
There's also additional parking in downtown Lewisburg, and Bob will personally shuttle you back and forth from there.
Operating valet services for anyone that needs it, Steve. I am available.
No, just act like you're an Uber and just do something.
Exactly.
Right? Make some money.
I can do that. But that'll be for Bucknell, obviously, it's going to be a challenge. But all the Bucknell wrestlers can say that they, you know, got to wrestle a national champion team. But and it'll be a big publicity thing for the Bison wrestling program. Not sure it's a big challenge for the Nittany Lions. They have a big one Sunday against Lehigh at Rec Hall.
Yeah, they have that Sunday against Lehigh. But they also But look, you're challenged every time you go out, regardless.
No question.
And I think here's the number one thing it does. It'll fill Soyka up.
Oh.
It'll give the Bucknell Wrestling Program a big boost. Cale has done this throughout his career. He has taken his program to places that he thought it would help them out and would help the sport out if he did it. So he's going to Bucknell because he knows it helps Bucknell and he knows it helps the sport.
And, he did that a few years ago when he went out to Utah Valley State, I think it was, to wrestle.
He was. He went to Utah Valley State. He did that. He also went to Boston University. Now, in the end, at BU, it didn't work. They sold it out. BU still dropped the sport.
Oh, too bad. On Sunday, the Lehigh match, again, local interest, Ryan Preisch of Milton wrestles for the Mountain Hawks of Lehigh, and I think he's about 184, and he's, I think, mm-hmm. ranked ninth in the country. Lehigh has about five nationally ranked wrestlers in their 10-man lineup. So we'll have a local boy from Milton.
Last year, Lehigh gave Penn State all it could handle
in
the dual meet. Gave them all they could handle in the dual meet last year. So we'll find out how this plays out over the weekend. Two intriguing matches, no question about that. Bucknell on Friday, which will help. Then Lehigh here, which is one of those traditional matches that a lot of people really enjoy.
No question. It goes back to the days when the Lehigh team were known as the Engineers.
I think it was the one where Mike Reed won at heavyweight. It was either that or Syracuse, one of the two, and they carried Mike off the mat.
Could have been Lehigh, I think.
It may have been Lehigh, and they carried Mike Reed, off the mat. I remember standing there with Zane Rutherford last year, and there was the picture. And I was explaining to Zane. Zane didn't know really anything about the picture. And we were standing outside the wrestling room, and I said, "That's Mike Reed." I said, "I want to say it's 1966, and he won it, and they carried him off the mat." I said, "The irony is that Mike Reed," and I'm explaining to him, Mike Reed is. I said,
yeah.
"Mike Reed won the Outland Trophy as the finest lineman in the country." I said, "Was a first-round pick of the Cincinnati Bengals, was an all-pro with the Cincinnati Bengals." He goes, "Well, yeah." He says, "Then he retired and then became a singer-songwriter in Nashville and has won two Grammy Awards." He goes, "You're kidding me." I said, "Zane, there's only one man on the planet," I said, "that's won an Outland and a Grammy." I said, "Him."
Yep.
I said, 7 billion people. He's it. And Mike is one of the funniest. I mean, I don't know how well you know Mike.
I've only shaken his hand.
I really personally like and respect Mike a lot. Let me give you a Matt Millen story. Matt was here in September. And now this story, part of it's really good, and then part of it I'll get to the other part that isn't so great.
Okay.
Matt's telling me the story about Joe going down to Altoona, years and years ago. And Mike Reed's mother loved Joe Paterno. Mike Reed's mother loved him. So somebody throws a couple microphones in his face, and they start asking him questions. Yeah, who's the best lineman you ever had? Oh, we had a lot of great ones. I mean, Matt Millen was a great one, right? And Mike Reed's mother says, "That's it. I'm never talking to him again." Right? And Matt and I are laughing, and I'm talking laughing hard about the story because of the way Matt tells the story. Okay. But then all of a sudden, Matt started coughing a lot. And I said, "That cough," I said, is a lot like you'd have a cough with pneumonia. I know it's not. He goes, "Yeah, let me explain it to you." And what's happening is fluid from the heart is getting into the lungs. And then he has to force it out with the lungs. So, now Matt's the kind of guy, just so you know, everyone knows Matt needs a heart transplant.
Right.
And he's on three lists. He's on in Newark, Mayo, and Cedars-Sinai in Los Angeles. But Matt also has certain parameters that he is enforcing. One of them is this. If a young heart is available and he's next in the list, he wants a young person to have the heart.
That would be Matt Millen.
That's Matt Millen. I mean, So he said, look, he said, I don't want to deny a young person who needs a heart to heart. That's, you know, that's, yeah. Oh, boy. You know, it's, he's hanging in there. But still.
I was talking to my friend who I grew up with named Randy Sidler, first-team All-American, the nose guard for Penn State.
1977, we had Randy on the show last year.
Yeah, the big redhead from Danville. And he had on one side of him on the defensive line Matt Millen, and on the other side Bruce Clark. Bruce Clark never said a word throughout the season during the games, just played like an All-American. And one time in the defensive huddle, Randy said he had to grab Matt Millen and tell him, Matt, will you just shut up? Stop talking. We need to hear what the defensive plays are. And Matt looked at him and, you know, kind of smiled and, okay, Randy, I'll do that. And next play, he's at it again. Wouldn't stop.
Well, remember, in 1976, as true freshmen, Matt Millen and Bruce Clark started at linebacker. And then in 77, they were shifted to defensive tackle.
Right. And Randy Sidler was a quarterback in high school and a linebacker, but he was a... he was a tight end his freshman year at Penn State, and the first freshman to score a touchdown for Penn State ever. And then they made him a nose guard. And he said, you know, I had to babysit Matt Millen and Bruce Clark. And, of course,
I mean, Sean's felt the same way about the suit. We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070. Elio, stop laughing.
I'm not laughing.
I can hear you in the background. Yes. God. The truth hurts. We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors. There's a lot of great charities around that deserve your attention and help if you can afford it. One of them is the Needy Family Fund. The donations today totaling over $3,000, and right now we're at $9,000. Since 1987, the Needy Family Fund, sponsored by the Daily Item, Sunbury Broadcasting Corporation, and BB&T Bank, has been incredible. The Degenstein Foundation's also helped out. It's raised more than $2.8 million during the holidays to assist the valley's less fortunate, and it's administered by the great people at the Salvation Army Citadels in Milton and Sunbury. The goal this year is $100,000. So we're 10% home. The goal is $100,000, and it makes a huge difference in people's lives, so remember that. Santa Claus is on night two, Magic Radio, from 6 to 7 this evening. We've tried to find out exactly how many years have been on. I said 81.
Oh, it's huge.
They think it's 82. The one person that can answer the question is showing no interest. So, you know, it's I'm putting out fires.
Yes.
Okay.
Always great. Putting out fires.
Yeah, he's putting out fires, all right. Most of them, he knows where the source of the fires are, too. Okay.
Yes.
UCF quarterback Mackenzie Milton not only sustained a traumatic right knee injury against South Florida, he also injured a nerve and has had blood flow issues as a result. He took a helmet to the knee when scrambling. His leg bent in an awkward angle. He was taken to Tampa General Hospital, where he still is. Tuesday, the family provided more detail on the severity of the injury for Mackenzie Milton. They thanked the doctors, the nurses, and the trainers for their prompt attention to Milton's injuries. He underwent immediate surgery to repair the blood flow problems Friday night, but he'll have to have reconstructive surgery to repair the knee at a later date. His blood flow has been restored to his right leg, and his nerve is injured but intact, according to the family. He's recovering and healing and is receiving the best medical care. At a later date, he'll have reconstructive surgery to repair the knee. Now, part of that, too, guys, the swelling has to go down first before they even think about doing that.
Yeah.
Just brutal, brutal leg injuries the past few weeks, both in the NFL and the in college.
Yes. And well, it turned out that in a video conference call, he took place in the quarterback meeting today from the hospital bed.
Wow, good for him. That's pretty awesome for his team.
Saturday, they're going to play Memphis for the conference championship. The schools announced, and Mackenzie Milton, by the way, is from Hawaii.
Yes.
They're going to give out 40,000 leis to fans attending Saturday's game in honor of Mackenzie Milton, who was born in Hawaii.
Wow.
Two great quarterbacks in college football, one from Notre Dame and one from University of Central Florida, from our 50th state. Who knew?
Yeah. I mean, Marcus Mariota. Marcus Mariota really got this thing going for other quarterbacks, and now you're seeing them in Tua Tagovailoa. You see it in Mackenzie Milton. I mean, it's really an interesting phenomenon, really.
Yeah. Who knew that Hawaii was a football power?
Who knew Hawaii was the cradle of quarterbacks?
Yes.
It used to be Western Pennsylvania. Joe Namath, Joe Montana, Danny Marino, on and on.
Kelly,
and on.
Et cetera.
You know, Johnny Unitas.
So, Steve, you're just getting ready for this big game tonight at the Bryce Jordan.
I'm all set. I've been set since Sunday. I got Pat this afternoon. We're good.
Excellent. You know,
I'll watch some tape. We're good.
And you've got Girardi right there with you, too.
Oh, yeah. And between Girardi and him, I've got it made. I mean, how fortunate am I?
Yes.
Any thoughts on the outcome?
Well, I think that, number one, Penn State cannot have live ball turnovers tonight. They need to keep that to an absolute minimum. Number two, they've got to be able to rebound with this team. And number three, and I know this sounds incredibly simple, but you have to hit some shots. You have to hit some shots. You hit some shots, you're going to be fine hitting shots.
No question about that one.
That's the whole, I mean, and I'm not talking about you don't have to hit 50%. Penn State hits 45, 46% of their shots, they're going to win the game.
All righty. Sounds good.
It's after Santa Claus tonight.
Go Lions.
Okay. Big man first, then the Nittany Lions. All right, the Magic Radio awaits. An hour from now. Bob, always great to hear you, my friend.
Oh, great to talk to you, Steve.
Great job, Christo.
Thank you, sir.
All right. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Q, it's 11 at 15 in Hummel's
Wharf. Your station for news, weather, business, and CBS Sports Radio. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury and on WKOK.com.